A couch potato warning is in effect as DirecTV transforms Thanksgiving into Streamsgiving. DirecTV's got free TV nationwide. With a heavy front of 60-plus live channels and a steady stream of streaming apps, conditions are perfect for nonstop entertainment. So hunker down on the couch and sign up for your free trial of My Entertainment from DirecTV. I'm going to watch some free TV.
Start streaming My Entertainment from DirecTV now at streamsgiving.com. My free is free. Paid services. 5-day free trial, then auto renews monthly. Cancel anytime. Temporary credit hold may apply. Restrictions apply. See streamsgiving.com for details. AI produced.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict and the Kremlin. I welcome George Friedman, the founder and chairman of Geopolitical Futures, a subscription site I recommend. These are mysteries that can be solved eventually, 100 years from now. Now we look very much at the fog of war in Ukraine and in Russia. George, a very good evening to you. Thank you. I begin not with the immediate peace offering by Mr. Putin again, but prior to that, events that remain puzzling. You've written about the change in leadership, that's what it is, at the Kremlin. Shoigu, the defense minister, to Secretary of the Security Council, perhaps also with the state security portfolio. And the man who was with that portfolio, Petrushev, to an advisor to the president without portfolio. A new man, Belyosev, who is an economist. Prior to that, he was with the presidential administration. He is now the defense minister, though no prior war fighting. And then beyond that, the mystery of the Kremlin. This is not the good old days of Kremlinology where you could count who's on Lenin's tomb and which position they stand from the general secretary. These are genuinely puzzling. What do you, at this remove several days after this decision, what do you see different about the leadership style of Vladimir Putin? Anything at all? Good evening to you, George.
Good evening. And yes, there is. Putin went into this war with a high degree of confidence that the Russian army could quickly sweep the Ukrainians. Well, it's over 2 years and it hasn't. In fact, they've only taken about 20% of Ukrainian territory. That moves him into a crisis position politically. One, they have to continue to spend money on this. Secondly, many Russians don't understand why this was such an urgent process. So a great deal of what they did had to do with influencing domestic policy. He had to find someone to blame, and he blamed the leadership of the military and the economy. And he got rid of them without shooting them or anything like that, in a kind of normal transition. Began appointing other people, and then started saying that the economy is just as important as the war. And that's important because the economy had been neglected during the war, actually had been weakened during the war, and that's what the Russian people were really living with. So instead of being a rapid win and celebratory marches, this has turned into, I won't call it the tomb of Ukraine, the tomb of Putin, but I will call it to some extent a very serious situation that he's in, and he's trying to solve it as best as he can.
I pay attention to state security because it's romantic to always talk about KGB, NKVD, MVB in Russia. Today, there is several apparatuses, parallel apparatuses, as it were under Stalin. Petrushev, before he stepped aside, had the portfolio of state security. Is that an important portfolio in the cabinet, more important than any other?
It is a critical one, but it depends on precisely how much authority they have. In the days of the KGB, they had enormous authority. Today, the FSB, the current intelligence organization, is there. And it doesn't quite have the same authority because the problems are not quite the same. They're not trying to steal secrets about American bombers. They're trying to understand their own people. They're trying to understand a very complex war, and they're not the players. Now, that's one of the problems. Putin's advisors weren't trained for this kind of war. In fact, many weren't trained for war at all. And they weren't trained to maintain a powerful economy at the same time as the war went on. And he's trying now to shift on that, to get back to something like that.
You mentioned the economy. It's not separate from the war fighting, because I've been told over the last year, certainly, the economy has moved to a defense economy. Everything for the front was the phrase from the Second War. And the defense industry is running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, I'm told. Also, their manpower shortage, same as the Army, and people are coming from very far away to work in the defense industry. Wages have been increased. In other words, there's general prosperity if you're working defense. Belyosev is now meant to manage that. To what end, George? How do you manage something turning out tanks?
Well, two things have to happen. The first powerful offensive has to be mounted in Ukraine, one that's successful, one that forces some sort of settlement. The second thing that has to happen is a restructuring of the economy, so it's civilian-oriented. So there are cars being manufactured instead of tanks. And this all comes down to this. They entered a war that they didn't win, and now they have to win it. So what we have to expect is whatever they say about the economy isn't quite going to happen yet. But they have got to get a settlement in Ukraine or defeat the Ukraine. And given how poorly they've done in the past, it's got to be a settlement. And there's talk of that. But politically, can Putin withstand 2.5 years of war that ends in a tie?
Before we get to the peace offer made by Vladimir Putin, if that's the right word, the ceasefire offer, there were two trips that are significant here. Primarily, Mr. Putin's trip to Beijing to renew or underline the no limits relationship. China has been accused of the United States of supporting the war effort without weapons, but in other means, dual use technology. There was nothing in the joint statement, the 7,000-word joint statement from the two leaders, that suggests anything else that a partnership devoted to success of both countries. Since then, there's been much talk of them working together, for example, naval exercises. That's been going on for several years. What did Mr. Putin want from Beijing? Money? Did he want confidence that he was in charge? How do you see that visit? Was it a success for Mr. Putin?
What Putin wanted, he didn't think he'd get it, but he was going to try, was the Chinese doing something like against Taiwan, and thereby forcing the Americans to send half of their tonnage of weapons elsewhere. In other words, to weaken them. And there was, in last week, a large Chinese flotilla around Taiwan, and they stayed there, but they didn't fight. The Chinese don't underestimate the Americans at all. They are very careful not to push them too far, and they're not going to join the Russians in this. And the Russians badly need the American attention to be somewhere else, away from Ukraine. And I think that's why he went to China. He went to China to say, look, this is our chance to split the Americans and hand them a serious defeat. You've got to cooperate. China had no confidence in that idea, and he went home with only a little demonstration to show for it.
There was a second visit, a travel visit by a leader, and that was Xi Jinping himself to Paris, to Budapest, and to Belgrade. Let's start with Paris. Mr. Macron has not been shy about making dramatic observations in these 2 years of war. Initially, it was to visit with Moscow, to be a Putin whisperer, much on the phone. Recently, Mr. Macron has been making statements, bellicose statements, about NATO troops in Ukraine. Now he said something about French troops, which would be NATO troops, as trainers in Ukraine. The exchange between Putin and Xi, nominally it was about trade or about investment in China. Do you see anything more out of that meeting? Did Xi get what he wanted? Did Macron advance himself as a speaker for the EU?
Well, I think Xi was interested in investment, and that's not a minor thing for the Chinese. their economy is a shambles. Their economy, to a great extent, was built by the Americans, by American investment, American imports of their goods. That's become a problematic thing. So instead of coming to the United States, which he had a few months ago, he went to the Macron and to the EU looking for some sort of economic relationship. The problem is that China's economy has weakened sufficiently that there's very little attractive in it. Making investments in China, you'd lose your money. So remember, there is more than war going on, and desperation can be take different forms. But I don't think that this visit to Macron had anything to do with the war. I think the war has taught the Chinese to be very, very careful in what you do and say. I think they came there to see if you get some trade going with the Europeans, some investment coming from the Europeans, stabilize them. So what is this? A lot of people interpret as an alliance between the Russians and the Chinese. I take to be an alliance between two cripples, the Russians militarily crippled and economically crippled, the Chinese staggering economically. And they will go to many places and do many things, try to solve that.
And Mr. Xi's visit quickly to Budapest, Hungary, Mr. Orban, and Belgrade, Vucic of Serbia. How did that serve China?
Well, it was an interesting thing because the Hungarians, who had basically been neutral but pro-Russian, had declared that the Russians could not win the war. And when he visited them, he visited people who would listen to him, be interested in him, who would regard China, even in its current situation, as an incredible power to be aligned with. So I think what we're seeing there is Xi is looking at the weaker players in Europe to see if they could begin entering that market, entering that relationship. I think at this point, they probably aren't eager to do so, but they would economically. But what we see everybody doing right now is maneuvering about what the end of the war will be. The Ukrainian war seems to be unwinnable by the Russians at this point. It could change. And everybody is now looking at the position they took on that war, the Chinese, the Hungarians, and are redesigning their strategy. What they're doing is every time a war ends, everybody reorganizes. And that reorganization has started.
George Friedman is founder and chairman of Geopolitical Futures. When we come back, Putin's peace plan or ceasefire plan or end of the beginning of the war in Ukraine. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Patchen.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next-day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.